Would you stand for the reading of God's Word, our familiar Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to Him. You know, there's a great desire in all of us to express what we know and what we feel, because life and truth are far more than just rational concepts. C.S. Lewis said it well when he said, "It is only through the imagination that we really sense something has meaning." It takes the imagination to sense meaning because, he says, for example, how do you grasp the glory of God? It's something that you must begin to picture in your mind. A good artist will reveal something about the greater reality of life in an indefinable and yet inescapable way. Jonathan Edwards said that unless you use your imagination, take a truth and imagine it, which of course is art, you don't know what it means. If you cannot visualize it, you don't have a sense of it in your heart. Now, this is what David is doing in the Psalms and the prayers of the Psalms. Here in Psalm 23, he is helping us visualize God. And for David to help us understand what God looks like, he says he is like a shepherd. To David, he is the great shepherd king. This psalm divides into two basic parts. And last week, we looked at the first three verses of this psalm. And let me just summarize that quickly for you. God is our shepherd, leads us. And unless we let Him lead us, He's not our shepherd. When He leads us, we must submit to His leadership and to His plans for us. And what is the first thing He does? The first thing He does is He makes us give up our own plans. We must yield our life to Him. Because what does He do? He makes us lie down in His pasture. He makes us lie down in His grass, where He wants to feed us, His word and His truth. That's the first step. The second thing, He wants to quiet your life down. He wants to lead you to waters that it says He has stilled. This is where you can drink from the Spirit of God. As Jesus told the woman at the well, that you would drink of water that will never go away. It'll always spring up with inside of you. It is eternal water. And Jesus wants us to drink of that water, to quiet our lives down and listen to what the Spirit of God is trying to teach us and to say to us. And then He says, I do all of that so that your soul, your damaged, sin-damaged soul, your damaged lives will be restored. And I want your souls to be restored so that you will walk in the paths of righteousness. You will walk in right paths. Why? For my name's sake. Not for our sake, not just so that we can do whatever we want to do. No, for His sake. In other words, for His will, for His purposes. So this means for Him to be our shepherd, He will provide all we need for His purposes forever, not just for us to do what we want to do, but you see, He's quite intentional in why He's leading us. He's leading us to the place that's going to deal with our sin-sick souls. He's leading us so that we will then walk in paths of righteousness to accomplish His will. Now, the second part begins then in these verses we look at today, in verses 4 through 6. This is where he gives us the promises that are ours, as indicated in the future tenses that are used in this last part of this psalm. David begins in verse 4, and he says, "Even though," David knows that a shepherd will take his sheep through dangerous places. So if I'm following him and he's restored me to paths of righteousness, even though I need to realize he will take me through dangerous places. Because if he's my shepherd as my Lord, I need to follow him wherever he takes me. And he doesn't take us through dark valleys just to scare us. He doesn't take us to dark valleys just to teach us a lesson. He's always taking us through dark valleys in order to take us higher. You see, this was an annual event for the shepherds of Israel. Every spring, every shepherd took the sheep up through the dark valleys because they were very narrow valleys, and so the sun would get blocked. And they would take them up. And the reason was is because sheep left to themselves will literally eat an entire area totally bare. They're so ignorant of the fact that they not only eat the blades, once they've eaten all the blades, they will start nibbling in the dirt and even eat all of the roots until they actually turn the area into a desert. And every shepherd knew this. And so before they got to that point, it was always time for the spring. And he would take them up through these dangerous valleys, these little narrow areas, in order to get them up higher where there was new grass. And in these areas would be where robbers would hide and dangerous animals could be, and it always was a scary place. But this is where he was taking them, and he was always taking them for the purposes of greater sources of food. He was taking them through these dark places to take them higher up and deeper in. Please note, it is the shadow of death. It isn't death. You can't have shadows unless there's light above. And this is what the shepherd is doing. He's taking you to food and he's taking you to greater light. The first promise is that life will not be an easy journey, but it's one in which fear is removed. Because he takes me through these valleys, even though I go through these dark places in my life, I will fear no evil. Jesus said, "I will never leave you. I will never forsake you." See, this is the promise of his presence. I will be there to guide you through. You will not go through these dark places in life alone. I think of my good friend, Jean Montgomery, member of our church, who's moving through a dark valley in her life, and literally she's battling a cancer that she will not win. And she's moved into a care facility, and I was recently visiting her right before Easter, and she said, "Pete, I'm so happy to be here." And I said, "Jean, why?" She said, "You know, because I'm meeting so many new people. I have so many people I can share Christ with." She said, "I meet new people every day I get to share Christ with." And she said, "You know, the other day, a lady came into me and she said, 'Oh, Gina, I'm so afraid.'" And she said, "Why?" "Because," she said, "my family's told me they're going to have to be out of town at Easter, and I'm going to be here all alone." And Jean said, "Oh," she said, "you're not alone. The Lord will be here with you, and I will be here as your friend." You see, Jean goes through the dark valley, but she has no fear, because she knows the Lord is with her. But it's not only no fear because of his presence, but it's because of his protection. He says, "Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Now, why do a rod and a staff comfort? First of all, what is a rod? What is a staff? Well, a rod could have been one of two things. Depending on where the shepherd actually lived, it could have been a club, something of this nature that a shepherd could hold, because it was a weapon. It was a weapon that he used to protect when necessary. But more than likely, because there were a lot of areas where there weren't very many big trees, it was probably more like this. It was more like a rod, something that was very, very hard that you could hit with if you needed to, and particularly for snakes and things, because there were lots of snakes in these rocks and stuff. But it was a rod that was used. And the rod was used, as I said, not only for protection, but it was also used for discipline and for correction. It's the one that's used in the book of Proverbs where it says, spare the rod and spoil the child. Or Proverbs 29, the rod of reproof gives wisdom, but a child left to himself will bring shame to his mother. The idea of the need of some kinds of discipline. But there was another use for the rod. Very interesting use found in Leviticus 27. When the sheep were counted, the rod was used. It says that the sheep had to pass under the shepherd's rod. So whenever they would come in at night, the shepherd would always hold his rod. He would touch each sheep because they would try to crowd through the sheepfold. So he always made the entrance to the sheepfold narrow. And he would move them aside and he would count them. So each sheep individually had to go under the rod of the shepherd. And it became a comfort to them because he comforted them with this rod as he counted them because he knew every one of them by name. And why are they a comfort? Well, the word comfort literally means they give me courage. They give me strength. And how do these things give strength? Well, they give strength because the sheep knew that the shepherd would literally give his life for them. When David went after the lion and the bear, he went after them with his club, his staff. He would go after them. And he would use, even if he had to, something even larger. The staff itself was something. This is done locally by a man here, but every staff was unique. And this one has the Ten Commandments carved on it. But a staff was something that the shepherd used, and it was a symbol of authority because it represented him. No staff was ever the same. And every sheep knew the shepherd had his own staff. And he would stand there, and the sheep would see him, and they would know he stood with authority as their shepherd. His voice had the authority behind it. And his staff showed forth that. And so they took their comfort and their courage in this because they trusted him as he counted them. They came under his rod and in the protection of his staff. Now at verse 5, many Bible scholars have puzzled because David either shifts his metaphors or he does something a little different with it. It goes a little bit. Some people have thought this is, he speaks now of a guest at a banquet because the sheep metaphor is not as obvious in the last two verses. Sheep don't obviously sit at a table. Or actually, he might be maintaining the shepherd metaphor, but he uses it much more creatively, as we will see. But regardless of which metaphor you use, the outcome is still the same. First, he says, you prepare a table before me. Now, the word table is not a wooden table. It's not the word for a wooden table that you would sit on. It literally is a word that means to lay a spread, to spread out. As any of us would go, even in the South, to picnics, you remember we would talk about, wow, what a spread. You know, we would talk of the food. And this literally was a sense of something being spread out. David uses this word again in Psalm 78, 19, where he says, can God spread a table in the wilderness? And he speaks of the manna that came down from heaven and spread out all over the ground. See, if the shepherd takes the sheep to higher ground through these dark valleys, what he would do was go up and find the next area that was flat that he could get them into. They didn't have big expansive meadows like we have in Colorado or anything like this. It's much smaller areas. But if you go to the Holy Land and to the east, you find all these many small terraces. And they've all been prepared. And what happens is the shepherd would go and find a flat spot that had grass like that. And then he would literally prepare the area. And he would do it by pulling out all of the poisonous plants. He would also find there were many of these little brown snakes they call puff adders, little adders, and they lived in holes in the ground. And so what he would do was he would put oil on the faces and the feet of the sheep because it had a scent in it. They would put spices in it, and it repelled the snakes. because the snakes would come out of those holes in the ground and bite the sheep on the legs or on the nose as they were down close to the ground. And so that's when he anointed the heads of the sheep, it would repel the snakes. He literally would prepare it. He would move the rocks around, and wherever there was any water flowing down the little crevice that he had climbed up to and stuff, he would create a little small pool of water for them to still water to drink from. And he would take those stones and he would create a little enclosed area next to a cliff or a little cave indention, and which would become the fold. But he literally would prepare the area or the table for the sheep. It was a wonderful, wonderful view. The word anoint here, though, is a word that is what led many of our scholars to think that he's shifting his metaphor to a banquet, because it's only used here. It's the only time in the entire scriptures the word is used. It doesn't mean to anoint like healing. It doesn't mean to anoint a prophet or a king for office, but rather the idea literally means to make fat or to make prosperous. From what we think it possibly means is the idea of create ownership. In other words, if you were to hand someone a fatty piece of meat, we would avoid that today, but in their days, because they didn't eat meat a lot, it was an honor. And so it's the idea possibly of bringing honor. It's as if David is kind of personalizing or personifying the sheep. We are like sheep, but we're still humans. We're still people. And as a shepherd blesses his sheep, we are his people. The promise here is the promise of honor and blessing that God bestows upon us. The shepherd is lavish. He overflows our cup with water. So it would be the water for the sheep or wine for a guest. This is the grace of God. There's nothing can be more obvious than the grace of God, because the New Testament said God lavishes us with his grace. That this is all God can do. He can't do anything but lavish because he's a king. So when the king gives something, it's always lavish. And he's the shepherd king. And this is what leads David to make this magnificent statement of confidence when he says, realizing what the Lord will do for me in preparing a table for me and anointing my head and my cup will overflow, he says, surely, certainly, only goodness and mercy will follow me all of the days of my life. And it's really the better translation is, only goodness and mercy can follow me because I have such a great shepherd. Now, please notice he doesn't say, maybe it will follow me, or hopefully it will follow me, but rather he says, no, it certainly will follow me. This great shepherd who prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies, whether it was wild animals or, as David himself was a fugitive for over 10 years of his life, and enemies followed him and pursued him as Saul sent people out to try to capture him, whichever one it was, David knew that the Lord had prepared and would provide for him regardless of the circumstances around him. This overflowing of cup and life, this steadfast love, the word here for this, that surely goodness is a word, it's a very unusual word in the Hebrew. It's even hard to say. It's chesed. You have to almost spit to say it. It is a word that meant the steadfast, continuing covenant love of God. It was the love of God that he had covenanted to give, therefore it will be given regardless. And this is the kind of love that's going to follow me. It's going to pursue. The word is even better than follow. The word is literally pursue me. Pursue me. Many of you remember that old Western movie, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, with Robert Redford and Paul Newman. And after they've robbed a bunch of trains and finally the authorities decide they've had enough of it, they start pursuing him. They chase him across Kansas. They chase him across Oklahoma. They chase him down into Texas. They go from the whole length of Texas. And about half of the movie is about them being pursued. And every morning they wake up and they look out and here's this little cloud coming after them, away from them. And every time, every morning, they say the same thing. They say, who are those guys anyway? They chase them all the way to the Mexican border. They finally are up against a wall. They've got to jump about 100 feet into the Rio Grande River to get out of the country to escape, but they were never going to quit. They kept coming after them. When Francis Thompson realized that the meaning of this word was really pursue, it's not just simply follow along, but it was the word pursue, he wrote this famous poem, very short poem, called The Hound of Heaven. Listen to how he picks up this concept of pursuit. I fled him down the night, down the days. I fled him down the arches of the years. I fled him down the labyrinth ways of my own mind in the mist of tears. I hid from him, and under running laughter, up vistaed hopes I sped and shot, precipitated adown titanic glooms of chasmed fears. From those strong feet that followed after, with unhurrying chase and unperturbed pace, deliberate speed, majestic instancy, they beat, and a voice beat, more instant than the feet, saying, all things betray thee, but who betrayest me? You see, he recognized the fact that the grace of God would never stop. It would pursue him. When you belong to the shepherd, the grace of God will pursue you. It will keep after you, and it will continue to keep after you, because the purpose of God is to bless you. The purpose of God is to take you up higher. The purpose of God is to restore your soul. The purpose of God is to make you lie down and drink of His waters and eat of His pastures. And David is confident here in the promise of God's love, that it would never cease to pursue him all of his days. And that's what leads him to say, there is no doubt. The promise is, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The word he uses for house is the word bait, which is the local word for house. So he's not really ready to go to heaven yet. I think he means both here. There's ultimate heaven, but it's now. Because a few psalms over, in Psalm 27:4, David speaks of his desire that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all of the days of my life, all of the days that I am still living, and I will gaze on the beauty of the Lord. See, this is the promise of eternal security. Once we belong to the shepherd, we will always belong to the shepherd. The shepherd will not stop. He will keep coming after us, bringing us back to the fold. He is saying, I belong to this shepherd forever. The psalm opens and ends with the word, the Lord. The Lord is my shepherd, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord. I want you to listen to what two artists wrote about their painting as they chose this last phrase for their painting. One man said this. He called the painting The Dwelling Place. He said, as I looked at the four themes within the 23rd Psalm, promise seemed to be the most difficult to put on canvas. Even though the promise is the heart of the Christian faith, it can be a bit challenging to show within one painting. After lots of thoughts and prayer and suggestions from friends, I came up with this idea of the dwelling place. It depicts all the pain and sorrow going on in and around the world, and yet it shows a safe haven as we are invited into His house. The area showing Christ in the garden is symbolic of an eye, and the line on each side or part of the eye. It is reassuring to know that even in a troubled world, there is still sanctuary in Him, called the dwelling place. And then one more, a woman painted one simply called The Key. She says, it was an overcast day, and my mood was not exactly sunny either. And then I opened the mail, and there was the call for entries to the 23rd Psalm Art Show. It made me pull out my Bible. I noticed how the themes gave the psalm deeper meaning. I was inspired to paint a young angel, newly arrived in heaven, who lived his life believing in the promise of God. Yet at the moment of his arrival, he stands in awe, holding the key to the Lord's house. And here's this angel, young little angel, you can see, being given a key to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You must see it. It's on the end of this second building over here. Let me ask you this question. Do you find yourself in a dark place? Do you find yourself wondering, why has God taken me into this valley? It doesn't seem like I'm going to get out. The promise that you need to hold of is this, is that God's intention is never to leave you in the valley, but to always take you higher. Because you see, you can't have shadows in a valley unless there's light coming from above. Which means he's taking you up to greater light, because there is greater grass for you to enjoy. Are there those who stand against you, who would rob you of your joy or your peace or your strength, and take a hold of the promise of the table? And isn't it magnificent that we have a table that Christ asks us to remember? Because it's because of that table of Christ, the shedding of his body and his blood, that we have every possible promise available to us. It's why he asks us to remember his death. He, as the good shepherd, is the one who laid down his life for us. He became the sheep that was slain and not us. And it is that provision of his grace that overflows into your hearts and restores your joy and your peace and your strength. That's a promise. Let me ask you, are you counting on God's grace to pursue you? Wherever you are right now, no matter what you've done, the pursuit of the grace of God has nothing to do with how good you're doing or how poorly you're doing. God's grace simply pursues you, like the hound of heaven. And we merely turn and yield ourselves to be the recipients of the beautiful grace of God.